Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everyone's having a great week so far. It is Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. here on the East Coast in New York, and we are gearing up for a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Hope everyone's got some good plans and going to enjoy some barbecue, some nice weather. And joining me for part 12 now of the extended series is Dr. Linda Groff. Linda, welcome back to the show. And let's see, maybe we lost her for a second. Linda,
yeah,
you there?
Yeah, but I'm back. I'm here now.
Yeah. She was there, she's gone, and now she's back. All right, perfect. Well, Linda, welcome back to the show. It's always great to have you on. As I mentioned, you know, each time that we have you on, you present some very interesting, fascinating, and certainly different thoughts, we'll say. Okay, we'll leave it at that. This has definitely been a great series to be a part of, and we welcome you back to the show for part 12 now. So for tonight's episode, I know we're going to be speaking about, why don't you go ahead and take us along with the topic?
Okay, well, the topic is space exploration and the search for extraterrestrial life, and whether we're alone in the universe or not, or whether the universe is populated with life. So now we can
very
get
cool.
into a little bit.
That's certainly
more
certainly something
stuff.
Very interesting to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. So when we talked about technology, new technologies affecting the world today in future evolution on our third topic, we didn't quite get time to do anything on space. So let me just say that a couple of sentences about going to space and the lure of going to space, and then I'll get into this whole topic about whether we're alone in the universe or not, which is a fun topic. Sure. So anyway, in terms of whether about space, you can look at space as the final frontier, except maybe the bottom of the oceans we haven't really totally explored. But really, the question is, why even go to space as human beings? Because we're not biologically equipped to survive in space. You know, you have all kinds of, it's a totally different environment. And like Darwin said, if you species has to adapt to a new environment, it can even evolve into a whole new species. So that, you know, but there's something that humans seem to have in the human spirit to explore the unknown and to push back boundaries. And so there is, you know, there have been U.S. and Soviet, during the whole Cold War, space races and so on. There's been manned or humaned and unmanned and unhumaned space programs and so on. And right now there seems to be a lot of focus. There's the International Space Station, but beyond that, there's different Mars missions. And if we had more time, I could go into all of that, but I think I'd probably... You know, there's NASA has its own two-way mission plan to Mars. There's a group called Mars One, which wants to take humans on a one-way mission, and they won't ever come back. And that's a private one. And then there's Elon Musk wants to also send people to Mars and so on. So it seems like, you know, Mars is one of the big goals for humans going to space in the, you know, as a goal right now. But anyway, let me go to this other topic that's an offshoot of that. So the question now is, you know, are we alone in the universe, or is the universe possibly populated with life? And this is a big question, and I've tried to go through all the different arguments about this, and I've come up with what I would call four different views on this. And so I'm going to kind of go through each one. But it's a fascinating subject, and I think, you know, I guess most people would probably like to think that there's other life out there, right?
Yep.
We're not just, I mean, you look up at the stars at night and it's like this vast universe up there. And, you know, what is the probability that we're the only life in that universe? It seems to me, well, I'm a proponent of it. I certainly hope, and I think most astronomers even. Hello?
Yes,
are
we're
you
here.
There? I mean, I think probably most people would like to hope there's life out there and that it's also somewhat friendly. That's a whole other question, but I'll get to that a bit later. But anyway, if we look at the arguments about whether we're alone in the universe or not, there's different scientific ones first, which I'll go over at the beginning. And then there's other ones that are a little more controversial, which I'll look at after, which is like the aliens have been visiting Earth or have been here in the past or that they're here now. And there's UFOs and ETs, you know, and cited now. And then the fourth area that I'll look at and maybe is science fiction, you know, as a possible intuition of things to come. because science fiction has become a very important film genre in Hollywood, you know, and is very popular. So why is that? Is it getting us ready for something? So anyway, so let me start with the scientific arguments, and then I'll go on to the other ones. So it'd be interesting if we had viewers, how many of them had. I mean, there's a huge disconnect, by the way, some of the scientific views and some of the alternative views about saying that there is life, there are UFOs, there's ETs that have crashed on Earth, you know, and so on, and all kinds of things, which is very different from what scientists come up with, which is so far we don't have evidence of life in the universe. So it's weird to me that there's such a disconnect. But anyway, so the first one, the scientific arguments of astronomers and others. So there's one thing people, there's somebody named Fermi who came up with something called the Fermi paradox earlier, which was, if the universe is populated with life, then why haven't astronomers and people like that found evidence for that? Which, you know, I have a stepson who's an astronomer, and he does claim that there is no so far. There was one blip that they got that they called a wow signal. That's the only one that the astronomers claim they found, and that they can't, you know, explain that was different. But there are a couple of programs, SETI and Kepler telescope, that are the ones I want to talk about that are really important in this search for life in the universe by scientists. So SETI is Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and they've been around for a while looking for life in the universe, and they say they haven't found it yet either. But they have testified before Congress, I think, in 2015 or maybe this year even, that if they were funded adequately, they thought they could find intelligent life in the universe within 20 years or 25 at the most. So that's a quite different view. You know, that sounds like they feel they're getting closer to it. And then in addition to that, one of the things that's been most interesting is the Kepler telescope. That's under NASA, and the Kepler telescope began searching for, you know, what happens when you look up at the stars at night. What you see are stars, right, which are basically like our sun. Our sun is a star. And
hello? Linda, are you there? And it looks like we might have lost Linda for just a moment. I'm sure she will be back on the line momentarily. And it looks like she is back. Linda, you there?
I'm back. Yeah, I don't know what's happening today. This is the first time this has happened, or if we keep disconnecting here. Maybe somebody doesn't want me to talk about this topic. Anyway.
No problem, no problem. Are you on a cell phone by chance?
Yeah, I've always been, though.
Okay, weird. All right, well, who knows? Maybe this is, we're talking about space, and maybe somebody out there is messing with your space so you can't talk about it.
That's right.
All right, so continue, please.
Yeah, so basically, when you look up at the stars at night, what you see are stars, which are like our sun is a star, and they're burning all the time, and that's why they light up the sky, and they give off a fusion reaction, which lights them up, and because of that, we can see them at night. But if they're planets that go around those stars, you don't see those because they don't give off light. So it's been a pretty recent thing since maybe around 2000 that they kept on finding a new way to find planets that are circling around stars outside of our solar system. So basically they found over 4,000 possible planets, and then they have certain criteria. They have to meet 99% of that to be definitively verified as a planet. But what happens is when a planet goes in front of a star, the light that gets emitted from that star that reaches us gets a bit of it. And that's how they try to identify that planets are circling that star. So, but, you know, they keep finding more and more of them. It's been pretty amazing. And in particular, they're looking for planets that are somewhat Earth-sized, up to twice the size of Earth, I think, that are in what is called the Goldilocks zone. And to me, it's amazing what they're able to find, because these are stars with planets going around them really far distances from us. And, you know, they're able to discover, like, how far they are from the star and all kinds of things. But the Goldilocks zone is the area where a planet circles a star, and that planet is not too close to that star that any water that would be on it would be evaporated. or it's not too far from its star that any water on it would freeze. So basically what they're looking for is our planets in this what's called Goldilocks zone, where water could be liquid, and therefore you could have that as a precondition for finding life. So that's why that's so important, because you need liquid water, that, you know, is the idea. And there, I guess the assumption is life elsewhere probably, at least, you know, would be, if they can find evidence for life, basically, then they think that's a great increased probability that there could also be life there, if there's water, I mean. Yeah, so that's what's exciting about all that. But they keep finding more and more of these, so that, you know, I think this has led astronomers more and more to believe that probably the universe could be populated with life, you know. I mean, to me, it seems kind of the height of hubris to kind of say, you know, that we're the only life in the universe. But anyway, that's, so those are some of the scientific efforts to find life in the universe. And then there's another Russian guy in July 2015. His name is Yuri Milner, and he's a Russian billionaire who put up $100 million, and he's working with Stephen Hawking, the famous British scientist, and so on. And their idea is to also put more money in for a 10-year or more project to look for life in the universe as well, with more powerful telescopes and so on. I think they want to explore 10 times the area of space with 50 times the sensitive technology that that's been used before. So they're going to use radio telescopes and optical laser telescopes. But the bottom line is science is moving pretty quickly today to find, on this particular effort, to find life elsewhere in the universe. And the potential for it. So that's kind of exciting. And then you have more controversial stuff. I don't know if you or anybody listening has watched the Ancient Aliens program on TV. I mean, I mean, I watch a lot of those because they're interesting, you know, and they have great photography of all these ancient sites. Their conclusions are a little speculative, I would have to say, because they can't totally prove what they're saying all the time. But what they're trying to say is that there's ancient sites on the planet which show evidence of quite evolved civilizations that were able to do things that we still can't explain today. So, for example, in Cusco, Peru, or ancient Egypt, there's different places around the planet. You have these structures that are huge, multiple ton blocks that different shapes that they fit together perfectly without mortar or anything. And somehow or other, you know, we don't even know for sure how they did that or how they built the Great Pyramid in Egypt, for example. You know, these huge multiple ton blocks. And, you know, so it's nice to try to pretend, I guess, that we're the most advanced life in the world so far. But, you know, maybe there were things that ancient civilizations had that are things we still can't explain today. And so the ancient alien hypothesis based on von Däniken, which is quite controversial to scientists, they call it pseudoscience. But that hypothesis is that some alien advanced civilizations visited Earth in the past and either helped build those or gave knowledge to civilizations at that time that were able to build these structures and wouldn't have been able to otherwise. So, you know, there's the program, I don't know what season, that's maybe now in the, I don't know, 11th or 12th or later season, I don't know. You know, it's a program, but I've always been interested in ancient civilizations too, and they have wonderful photography of ancient civilizations, and then they, you know, bring in all these ideas. They do kind of speculate, you know, that, well, based on this evidence of these structures and so on, maybe this was based, you know, built by ancient aliens, but we can't, you know, a lot of it is somewhat speculative, but, you know, it's still interesting to watch. And so that's the idea. And in terms of past alien ET connections to Earth, another area that I find really interesting, if you talk to a lot of the indigenous, ancient civilizations, indigenous cultures on the planet, they all have in their origin myth the idea that they originally came from some star system. And so where does that come from? Did they just make it all up, or is there actually something to it? You know, so if you look at like ancient Egypt or the Dogon tribe in Africa, also they definitely talk about the dog star Sirius. And what was interesting with the Dogon tribe, they had diagrams and stuff, and there's two moons of Sirius or something, but they only discovered, modern astronomy only discovered what they have in their origin myth very recently. So how did they know that? You know, it's an interesting question. And then in ancient Egypt, for example, the goddess Isis was tied to the star Sirius, and the god Osiris, who was the god of the underworld after he passed away, was tied to the Orion's belt. And some people think that the three pyramids on the Giza Plateau also are arranged not just exactly in a straight line, but the third one goes off of it, and that that's also the same as the three stars in the Orion's belt, you know, in the constellation of Orion. So, you know, there's all those things. And then other indigenous tribes like the Hopi, the Zuni, the Maya, and so on, they also have ties to different star systems in their origin myths, and they believe that that's where they came from. So, you know, where, you know, did they just make it up, or is there maybe something to that? So those are all examples of older civilizations that might have some ties. And there's, I think there's, the other thing is, in terms of these structures on the planet, we, there's just structures that are very advanced in ways that we can't, you know, explain today in terms of their structure and architecture and so on. And so, you know, where did that knowledge come from people who were in supposedly in a much more primitive state than people are today? Right. You know, that's something we really just can't quite explain. So anyway, those are very interesting arguments. And then a separate set of arguments that's interesting is arguments that people saying that UFOs are here today, that, you know, there's different pilots who claim they see UFOs and so on, and that they're visiting today. And then there's examples like Roswell, I think 1947, there was a claim that was put in the newspaper one day, and the next day they said they changed it and said, no, it was a weather balloon, but they said it was a UFO or unidentified flying object. So that a UFO could be made by humans, by the way, but, you know, the idea is sometimes maybe they're coming from somewhere else. So there's whole programs on TV also on UFOs, you know, and all of that. So, you know, what's interesting, if you look at those, to me, is, and there's people who have photographs of the UFOs, and they come in, and then they'll do these amazing change of direction and take off and just disappear so fast in a way with the technology we couldn't do that today, you know. So so anyway, that's another very interesting thing, is whether they're visiting today and whether there have been crashes of UFOs. And the different intelligence services have picked up those and even taken their technology and reverse engineered it, you know, so that's one explanation for our more advancing technology happening today. And then there are people who claim to be even having been abducted by aliens, which is a little scary. These people, you know, claim that they're part of experiments where they're, you know, they have those hybrid children, offspring of them. With some alien DNA in theirs, and then some of them claim they've gone up and met their offspring, you know, and so on. So there's all those arguments also about alien technology, about UFOs and extraterrestrials. Hello?
I'm here. We're still here.
Oh, okay, good. All right, so that's another third area of arguments today about whether we're alone in the universe or not. But what's interesting, if you look at these, that ancient civilizations maybe had intelligent life visiting in the past that gave them, you know, knowledge that they wouldn't have had otherwise to build these amazing structures, or that people have been abducted today and so on. Those sort of are a very different view than the view of scientists who are claiming they're, you know, finding more exoplanets now and so on, but that they're, you know, they still haven't found evidence for life. So it's a different method that people are looking at, I think. And so they're coming up with quite different results. And then tied with that, I guess I need to also mention, is there's a group called MUFON, M-U-F-O-N, which has annual conferences, I believe, about UFOs and so on, and keeps big warehouses full of ideas for people. And another thing is they've had a couple different disclosure projects at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C.,
okay.
Where they've tried to get people to testify about the evidence and what they know about extraterrestrial life and about UFOs and so on, to try to get governments to disclose what they know. And so they had them earlier, and then they had some again, I think it was this last year or so. And there one person who's an interesting person is the former Prime Minister of Canada, or defense minister, maybe he was, and he has publicly come out various times to say, yes, UFOs exist, and governments are covering it up. And there have been other astronauts, too, before. The person, what's his name, Edgar Mitchell is another former astronaut who came out and said that they were real, but that governments are covering it up. You know, so the whole disclosure project is trying to get governments from different countries to you know, say they know about this and to make it public. And there have been stories that, you know, there have been debates about the government releasing this or not. I mean, the interesting question is, why would they not release it? And then there's speculation, well, they're afraid that people might not know how to react or panic, you know. And earlier, when, like, Roswell happened in 1947, maybe that had just been right after the end of World War II, and people had already gone through so much trauma that they maybe thought they couldn't handle it and so on. But, you know, there's different views that there's like, you know, private group that has gone ahead with space exploration with very advanced technologies that go beyond what we all know about, and that maybe already have missions on Mars and so on. So, you know, you can get into pretty far out stuff with this. And the biggest problem, I think, is you can't verify it, you know, because it's hard to verify it because governments won't do that. And so that's the challenge. And then there is a fourth area for me that's interesting because I've done future studies for years, and that is science fiction. So science fiction, you know, a lot of it we talked about before, the hero's journey, where you leave your familiar environment and you jump off into the unknown and you have some adventure to find out who you really are, and then you come back. Well, going to space is a clear example of that because you're leaving your familiar world, the Earth, behind, right, to explore space. And so that's, you know, some people call space the final frontier. So that's a great example of the hero's journey. And so what's also interesting to me in terms of films, if you look at Hollywood films, you know, they used to be a lot of cowboys and Indians films, and now that they've been almost totally replaced with space films, you know, and science fiction. So that's like the new genre of films. And if you look at the whole series like Star Trek, which is incredibly popular and has gone through various different iterations in both television series and feature films, and or you look at Star Wars even or whatever, and all the other science fiction stories, of which there's so many, and novels as well, why is that so interesting to people today, you know? And I think, I think it's one of the reasons it's relevant is that we as a species ourselves are now becoming a technologically advanced enough civilization that we have begun to leave our own home planet to explore our solar system and the universe beyond, you know, and we've had unmanned missions as well as human missions, right? But the idea is, as we're starting to go out into the universe more and more to find out what is our place in that universe, of which people have always tried to figure that out in ancient civilizations looking up at the stars, you know, but we're trying to, as we start to do that, you know, then science fiction seems very appropriate, right? Because it sort of mirrors what we're already doing. So, there's another very interesting thing, and that is another issue that's interesting is, are aliens, if they're there, and maybe even lots of them, and maybe, you know, some people claim there's lots of different alien species that are out there that have also contacted Earth. So, you know, again, you know, verifying this is what's difficult. So, but the question is whether those species are all friendly or not, you know, and if you have for sure that a species that has come to Earth is going to be more advanced in their technology and so on than we are, because otherwise it wouldn't have been able to get here, right? So the question is, if they're more advanced than we are and hostile, then we're probably in pretty deep trouble, right? But if they're more advanced than we are and friendly, and they're trying to help us evolve, actually, and encouraging us to evolve. You know, some people say that we have to get to the point as a human species that we're ready for them to invite them in before they will show themselves, you know. That's a very different view than looking out for exoplanets, you know. So all of this is happening at the same time. But here's an interesting idea. There's a hypothesis, kind of interesting, that if a civilization, at any civilization that gets to the point where it is advanced enough technologically, that it can begin to leave its own home planet to explore its own solar system and the universe beyond, that at that point, because as technology is more advanced, it can also be more destructive. And if different members of that species on that planet are still hostile to each other, like U.S. and Russia, say, let's say, you know, so that they have this advanced technology and they're willing to turn it on each other, then they could end up blowing themselves up, right? And the whole experiment of getting out to space would never happen, you see. So it's an interesting idea that perhaps, you know, species that have actually made it, you know, from some planet out into space, have had to get through that stage where they could have potentially, you know, destroyed themselves with their technology. So it's an interesting idea. But what's interesting to me is that's exactly where humanity is today. You know, we have to get our act together as a human species and stop, you know, being just hostile to each other. And if we want, we need to have use our technology to move humanity forward, and, you know, not just one's own country, but humanity as a whole. You know, there's people today working on various things, how to eliminate poverty, disease, various parts of the world. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the amount of money that we spend on the military and armaments, for example, is enormous. And if some of that was liberated, right, to spend on just helping people get educated, get better health, get more opportunities in life, you know, that could make a big difference. So that's another perspective in all of this. But anyway,
absolutely.
It's an interesting subject. Yeah, very interesting subject. Yeah. What is your view, Rob? Do you have a view on this?
For me personally, I definitely think that there's too much out there for us to be the only thing, only living, you know, creatures, you know, the only planet that's inhabitable. I don't buy it. There has to be something else out there.
Right. I mean, that's what I think, too. I mean, it seems the height of sort of what you call hubris, you know, like self-centeredness, right, that we are the only life in the universe. But there's also very interesting, we have another minute here. I mean, if life in the universe is confirmed, and some people say it already is and others say it's not, but if it is, then there's whole new fields that will expand quite a bit, like exobiology, the biology of alien life, you know, exopolitics, how to negotiate with extraterrestrials, space medicine, how do you live in space, architecture for space colonies, military interest in space, but even religion, like, do we need a new God then? Do we need to reformulate what is God if it's not just for my own religion or my own group of people, but for, and not even just for humanity as a whole, but for all life in the universe, you know? So there's huge issues that it brings up. And but fascinating stuff. Yeah. And if we confirm life in the universe, then we're gonna have to learn to negotiate with even not just different cultures and religions and races on Earth, right? But with even more diversity, which is what science fiction is already preparing us to do. You know, that's like Star Trek, for example. So anyway, that's my brief little summary on some of this stuff, but
Absolutely. Well, you know what, Linda, you know, we are rounding out now to the final about minute and a half of the show. You know, this is part 12, so hopefully we can get you back on for a couple more episodes, because I know there's a couple more topics that, I mean, we could have you on literally for the rest of the year and have enough to talk about. But hopefully, like I said, a couple more shows. Everyone, please check out lindagroff.net. That's LINDA. GROF as in Frank, F as in Frank, .net. And Linda, please, you know, with the next couple, you know, 20 seconds or so, let people know the best ways to contact you.
Oh, well, they can email me at Evolving Worlds, one word, no caps, plural. So Evolving, EVOLVING, Worlds, WORLDS, at gmail.com. Okay? And I'd love to hear from people. So. Yeah, it's been lots of fun to do this series, so I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Rob, too, for
absolutely. Well, Linda, thank you so much for coming on. And, again, you know, I want everyone to please check this out. I mean, if you've been listening to this series, you know that this is definitely some challenging thoughts, a lot of thought-provoking, interesting topics that Linda has brought to the table in the course of these 12 episodes. So we appreciate everybody listening, and hopefully we can have Linda back on in the very near future. And either way, Linda, we'd love to find out and hear from you, you know, to see how things have been going for you. So thank you so much for coming on, and we will see you again soon. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying have a great night, and thanks for listening.
Okay, bye-bye.